Welcome to this podcast and Thriving Abroad, where we support organisations as they work to maximise the potential of their global mobility programmes. Through our services, we support assignees and their families to create lives and careers they love while they're living overseas. I created this podcast to share expat stories to inspire and expert advice to help organisations and individuals navigate the challenges and maximise the opportunity of international transitions. And I'm delighted today to welcome to this call Alison Hesketh. Now, for over 20 years, Alison was an independent charity troubleshooter, jumping into charities in the crises as acting chief executive to sort out whatever chaos they found themselves in. 12 years ago, her mother found herself no longer able to manage the house she'd lived in for many years. And after helping her mother sort through a lifetime's possessions and settle her into her new home and new community, Alison realised that there was a pressing need for a service to help others in her position. Alison took a career break from charities to look after her mother in her final illness, and after her mother died, set up Time Finders in 2010. One of the services that Time Finders has developed is a contingency planning and support service for the elderly relatives who remain in their home country when younger family members are living overseas. Today, Alison is going to share some of her knowledge and expertise for expatriates who have elderly relatives in their home countries. So very warm welcome, Alison.
Thank you.
Great to have you join us today. So let's start by, would you like to give a bit more background to you and to the work that you have done and the work that you now do?
Well, the charity troubleshooting was fascinating because I would work with charities for anything from 3 months to up to 2 years. I worked mainly with health, welfare and medical research charities, medium-sized charities that didn't have the resources in-house to cope with crises of chief executives suddenly leaving or the chairman of the board running off with the treasurer's wife and £30,000 and various other interesting little things that, of course, I can't go into detail about. But I was on the spot all the time, project managing, I suppose, and those skills have been transferred very much to Time Finders, although it's in a different area. We are helping people project manage a great deal of change going on in their lives.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think any expats or anyone who's lived abroad for a time will have met other expats who have had to cope with these kind of challenges with their elderly parents.
Absolutely.
Yes. So I can imagine. So project management skills you bring to Time Finders, but then also, I guess, having worked in health and welfare charities, I guess it's quite a bit that's been transferable from those as well.
Yes, absolutely. The knowledge that you need to get the services that people require, knowing who to go to ask for information, realizing that there's an awful lot that you don't know, but knowing where you can go to get the answers is incredibly important.
Yes, yeah. And can be incredibly complex, I think. I know people here who think they know the health system, but it's only when you're starting to deal with these kinds of issues for parents that you suddenly realise there's a huge amount of complexity to it.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So what are the challenges and issues that you find expats are facing when they relocate abroad and they're leaving your parents? Not necessarily elderly, I suppose, always, is it?
But no. Younger people going abroad, their parents may well be in their sort of late 40s, 50s. Obviously, we're dealing with people who have older parents. Caring at a distance, however great or small that distance is, can put an enormous strain on careers and on personal relationships. And what we found is that expats often suffer a great deal of anxiety and guilt and grief, that they're not actually with their parents. But that's mixed with resentment and anger that they actually feel these things, and that's actually stopping them getting on with their life abroad. And if you're an only child, the burden of responsibility obviously falls solely on your shoulders, which is hard. But actually, it can be easier than arguing with siblings back in the UK who may have a very different view of how, you know, parents should be looked after, and who may also be feeling very resentful at what they see as you swanning off to your lovely life abroad and leaving them to deal with it. So establishing really good communications between family members is essential before you go, and talking openly about those feelings, both the people who are being left behind and the people who are going. Because it's very easy to get the wrong impression of somebody's idea, somebody's how they feel about things. People are very good at sort of putting a brave smile on things, saying, "Oh yes, that's fine. You know, you go off. I'll deal." And actually, you know, sitting there seething with anger and resentment.
Yes, yeah. And I can relate to that too, and not in the sense of elder care, but just in the sense of, you know, parents who've helped us by looking after house, you know, our house, for example, when we relocated abroad. And
yes,
as you leave, we didn't ever anticipate or realise, I think, and recognise the amount of time it took to actually be involved. And it took us a while to suddenly catch on to the fact that it was quite time consuming. And yeah, it's and that was just an inanimate object, a house, not people. So I can totally see how those frustrations can build. And I guess we all
take things for granted.
Yes. And we all want to help, don't we? That's, I guess, often our initial, "Oh yes, I'll help." But then you don't quite realise the extent of that. Yeah. That help.
What you've just let yourself in for.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. So, and specifically, the sort of the challenges that you come across that people are having to cope with when they leave elderly. Do you have any sort of specific stories or cases?
Well, I suppose that the story that got us into developing an expat service in the first place. In that one Saturday afternoon, I picked up the phone and a chap said, "Got a little bit of a problem. A 96-year-old father in hospital recovering from surgery, and my mother, 10 years his junior, is in a different hospital from which he's already escaped twice." Social services have got involved, and they've said that they can't go home. They're going to go into care. They're going to put my mother into a home for people with dementia, and they're going to send my father somewhere else. That's going to kill them. They're going to separate them after 50-odd years of marriage.
Gosh.
What do I do? Can you help? Oh, by the way, I live in America. And, you know, and that encapsulated everything that I imagine an expat dreads, getting that telephone call. So we were able to help. We were able to find a home that could take both parents. They could live together as man and wife in a home that specialised in looking after people with dementia. And from then, realised that there was an awful lot of other things that somebody living abroad without another family member in the UK needed. It's all very well getting a telephone call from the care home manager saying, "Oh yes, your mother's fine." It's very different and very reassuring to have an independent person going in and saying, "Yes, I had lunch with your mother today, and we spoke about, you know, when she used to live down in Somerset or, you know, wherever." And you have that very personal relationship. That can provide an enormous amount of reassurance to somebody who's 5,000 miles away, where communication isn't very easy because a parent has dementia.
Yes, so you can't actually speak very easily with them. And so I guess the kind of support you provide perhaps does it have two kind of tranches? So you've got the crisis management, which I guess was that case study when something happens, you have to react quickly. But then also there is the kind of being more proactive and planning and sitting down and helping people to think forward about needs or potential needs as they may occur in the future, which obviously we never know, do we?
No, and you can't plan for every eventuality. Getting people to plan ahead, particularly in this area, I think is very difficult because people just want to put their head in the sands. They don't want to think about their parents getting old and frail.
No.
And their parents don't want to think about, you know, what's going to happen at the end of their lives. So it's a difficult subject. Death is still very much a taboo subject. People don't want to talk about it. It's getting a little bit easier. But it can be very hard to have those conversations with your parents, but if you have a contingency plan, it can reduce immeasurably the level of anxiety that you will face when somebody becomes ill or an emergency happens. And I think it's really important to remember that a contingency plan isn't just about what happens to your parents back here in the UK, but it's a contingency plan for you too. And when a crisis hits, people, even the most logical people, have an element of panic. And, you know, just as an airline pilot will reach for the protocols if an aeroplane gets into an emergency, and they will read through what they have to do, that reduces the panic. That means that you do what needs to be done. And a contingency plan for expats is exactly the same. I mean, who's going to pick your children up from school if you have to leap on a plane? Can you get compassionate leave if you're working abroad? Do you have enough money in the bank account to buy a plane ticket to get back? Who's going to feed the cat? You know, all those things. If you're panicking about those things, you're not going to be in a good position to support your parents, you know, back at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it has two parts to it very much.
Yes. So, Let's talk a bit about that contingency plans then. I suppose, taking it back a step first, let's talk a bit about some of the issues that you think people should be broaching with their parents before leaving to move overseas. And then we'll move on to talk about, you know, perhaps how they put together a plan, what that plan might look like. So what would you identify as the key issues?
Well, there are the legal things. Persuade your parents, if at all possible, to make lasting powers of attorney. There are two types of powers of attorney. One is for property and financial affairs, which means that if they are incapacitated, the attorney can pay the bills, make sure that care can be paid for, that sort of thing. And then there's health and welfare. A health and welfare power of attorney only comes into effect when somebody has lost capacity. Either they've got dementia, or, you know, they've fallen over and they're unconscious for a few days. But it means that decisions about how they want to be looked after, whether they want to do not resuscitate notice, or, you know, that those sorts of things are involved in a health and welfare power of attorney. So it's really important to get those set up, even if you, the expat, are not going to be the attorney that they choose. But to know that they are set up, that that can be looked after, again, takes away a lot of the stress when an emergency happens.
Yeah.
When you're doing a power of attorney, an LPA as they're known, it's also a great time to encourage your parents to update their will or create their will if they haven't already done one. And because you're talking then about death, and you're talking about what happens if they become ill, it's a very good opportunity to talk to them about what they want to happen, what their decisions and feelings might be about their future.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing, that the legal thing. The other thing that I would say is, whether or not your parents are computer savvy, for goodness sake, get them using a video internet service like Skype. Even if they've never used a computer, you get them a tablet and get Skype or another video internet service on it, and teach them how to use it. And if you've got children, then grandchildren are often a lot better at teaching grandparents than children are.
I can vouch for that. My daughter's just been teaching my mother how to use her new iPad.
Yes, that's right. You know, and provide written instructions, including where to find the on button. I know it sounds daft, but somebody who isn't computer savvy, those things panic them. And set up a regular time when you're going to Skype. Because I think if you can get into the habit of doing it regularly, I say video calling because parents are terribly good if you phone them up and say, "Oh, how are you today?" The answer is so often, "I'm fine," when really they're not. And if you can see them, you can see if they've lost a lot of weight or they're not looking well. It's more difficult to get those feelings if you're just having a telephone call.
Excellent point. Yes. Yeah.
So I think those are a couple of things to get going, and also managing expectations. You know, how frequently are you going to be able to come back? Are they going to be able to come and see you? Don't make promises you can't keep, because you know most parents are going to feel a bit bereft as you're leaving. Most parents would never dream of telling you that they feel a bit bereft about you going abroad, but they will worry. And and if they don't say anything, it's a big reassurance to know that you'll be in contact regularly and you'll get back as often as you can.
Yes, and I think if they're able to travel, I think yes. One thing that we always did was to organise those first visits. I mean, my mum always used to say, "Right, when am I coming to see you? Because I have to have a visual image of your home in my mind." And I felt much better once I can picture you and I know, you know, what your where the kids are at school and, you know, what your like surrounding area is like, so I can just imagine you there.
Yeah, and it's very important, you know, they when you're having breakfast, they know where the breakfast table is and what view you have out of the window.
Yeah. It makes them feel they're part of your life still, I think it's important. Yeah, very important. Any other issues we should be broaching with parents?
Well, it's difficult if your parents are hale and hearty. You know, you don't want to talk about them getting frail, but it's a good opportunity to really find out how they're managing in their home at the moment. And to remember that putting a little bit of extra help in before it's needed can actually prevent a lot of crises from happening. A lot of people become ill, you know, and they have falls when they're struggling to deal with their living environment. They may find cooking difficult, and if you put in a little bit of help with the garden, a little bit of help with cleaning, somebody to come in and cook a meal a couple of times a week, almost before they need it, then you, first of all, you've got somebody on hand who can, if you like, ramp up that level of support if it is needed. And secondly, you've got somebody who's keeping a close eye on how your parents are managing.
Yes, very important, I think. And that's just making me think about my parents and how they, I'm just thinking they could do with a bit more help.
You know, because people are very proud, they don't want to admit that they need
it. That's exactly what I was thinking. They're very self-sufficient, yes. And yes. For as long as they can, yes. Yeah.
And also frightened, because the last thing they want is to be put into care, and any hint that they may not be managing, people are frightened that going into care is the only option, when it's not. You can have excellent care at home. And also, not all care homes are Dickensian workhouses, despite the headlines that you might read.
Yes, but probably quite important to have that conversation with them about longer term prospect in terms of care, whether they are going to want to stay in their own home or whether, I mean, and it's not necessarily the next transition is into care, is it? Because even more now there are these elder, what do we call them? Sort of villages that, you know, they have. In fact, there's one near my parents, which my dad describes as stage housing. He said, I could move into a three-bedroom house, and then I'd move into my two-bedroom, one-bedroom apartment, and then I'd move into the care home, and then I'd move across the road into the cemetery. But these places, so it's not necessarily moving straight into a care home.
Not
housing, perhaps.
There's sheltered housing. There's moving somewhere that is more manageable, like, you know, moving from a large house into a smaller bungalow. And, you know, even if you need care, as I say, moving into care is not the only option. If you've downsized and you've got money to pay for a care home, then the chances are you've got money to pay for living care.
Yes.
You know, so there's somebody on hand 24 hours a day. I mean, again, this is something that TimeFinders organises for our clients. They ask us to source excellent professional care, either, you know, care two or three times a day or live in care. And that can mean that people can stay in their own home. It might not be the home they're in at the moment, but it's still there, if they move to a little bungalow or whatever. But it is still their own home with all their own things around them.
So when are there any other issues there we haven't covered? Or
there are hundreds of issues. I could probably go on all day, but I think those are probably the most important.
And actually there was one question I wanted to talk to you about, and that is, I mean, we're talking about UK care here, I should just say that actually to anyone who's listening. So for example, we were talking about the powers of attorney. These are
England and Wales. I think Scotland has a slightly different
But probably the principle applies wherever you are in the world.
In most places I think a similar thing applies. And one of the things I would say is that it's actually a good way for you to lead by example. You know, these conversations are difficult to have with your parents, but if you have a chat with your parents and you start with, you, this is my power of attorney that I've created for health and welfare or for property and financial affairs, just in case I fall under a bus. That's a very good introduction to getting your parents to think about doing their own powers of attorney.
Very good idea. And actually, you know, you're making, I just encourage my parents to do them, but actually I haven't got one for myself.
And they could be needed at any age.
Absolutely. That just is a good example of how we never like to think about not at all. So in terms of, I mean, I suppose we've really covered the idea about plans as well, haven't we? Because there's a plan already beginning to form for anyone who's listening here. You know, think about your legal perspective, think about power of attorneys and wills, ensure that those are all in place, and then some of the things that you can do to help the communication between yourself and your relatives in terms of computer and video, Skype video or Zoom. We're using some software called Zoom. I'll put the link to that in the blog that associates with this interview, because it's free up to small groups of conversations, so that's great.
It means you can have family conferences and family chats as well.
Exactly. And then of course there's always FaceTime as well, if you're on your iPhones and Macs and all of that. So what are the plans, if we're thinking about a plan? I mean, when you work with people, do you sit down and work out a plan with the person who's moving abroad and the elderly?
And the parents. Oh, yes, definitely. Because parents very often have ideas that their children have never thought about, and might come as a bit of a shock, and their children might not even approve. And one of our things is to really encourage children, if you like, to allow their parents to make their own decisions about things. There comes an age where children think that they know more than their parents, and can be quite bossy. So a lot of our work is actually working with the parents so that they can put their own ideas down. But a contingency plan is not just about planning for old age and sort of a long term in the future. It's a very practical document. It has in it all the information that you're going to need should a crisis happen. So if I go back to that, you know, the original story of somebody calling and saying, you know, what am I going to do about my parents being separated? You know, it took a little time to gather up all the information that we needed. Who was their GP? What was their NHS numbers, NI numbers? You know, was there a power of attorney in place? Who was their neighbour? Who was going to feed the budgerigar? Or water the orchids? You know, these sound like little incidental things about the cat, etc. But you can be quite sure that whilst you're worrying and flying home because your mother's had a stroke or something, she's going to be sitting in a hospital bed worried sick about who's going to be feeding Tiddles. And that'll be the first question that she asks, probably. And worry and anxiety actually impedes recovery. So it's about reassuring the person who has become ill or has had an accident, so that they can recover as quickly as possible. And when we're developing a contingency plan, again, particularly for people who are only children, or perhaps where their siblings live a long way away from their parents as well, we're looking at who are the local contacts within the community that might see your parents regularly. You know, if they worship, you know, is there a rabbi or a vicar who they see regularly every week, who would be able to just give you a call and say, haven't seen your mother this week. You know, she normally turns up very regularly. Are there friends? Are there a member of the WI or the book club, or, you know, whoever? Who do your parents interact with who would be able to raise a concern if they thought somebody wasn't feeling very well, or they were looking very frail and unsteady on their feet? But the crucial thing is that you have to get your parents' permission to do this. You have to get them on side, because, again, most people are very private and they don't want other people knowing their business. So you've got to be very sensitive in the way that you perhaps just choose a couple of people that you can go to your parents and say, would it be okay if I left them my contact details? And don't forget to let them know the time difference as well. That's really important when you're leaving your contact details. You know, just in case something happens, and, you know, and they can give me a call.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very, very good point. Very good point. Yes. So do you have suggestions about broaching this kind of conversation with parents? Can be very sensitive and difficult, as you said. I mean, one way you suggested was to start doing some of the processes for yourself and then extend it to the parents.
As I say, lead by example. It depends very much on the relationship that you have with your parents, but I favour the, what happens if you fall under a bus type of approach, rather than the, let's sit down and talk about death and dying and disease, you know. I think you just have to sometimes jump in and say, look, this is going to be incredibly embarrassing and excruciating, but can we just talk about, you know, what's going to happen? Otherwise, I'm going to be sitting in Sydney worried sick about, you know. You can turn it on yourself. But as I say, if you can encourage people to do lasting powers of attorney, you'll be sitting down with a solicitor. It's a good opportunity to follow on that conversation with, well, you know, what you said to the solicitor about this, that and the other. Can we just talk about what's going to happen in future? I think some of our clients have found it easier to have an external professional to help them with some of those issues. And, you know, solicitors and financial advisors are good people to help with that as well.
And so just being involved in those conversations with your parents, and then that opens the whole subject up, doesn't it, as well?
Yes. Yeah. And again, you know, if you've got siblings, it's really, really important to get them involved as well.
Yes. So everyone's on the same, everyone's agreed and understands the basis. And
yeah, I mean, the simple thing, I mean, it's not a nice thing to think about, but, you know, what happens if somebody has a massive stroke and is not going to recover? You know, do you know your parents' views on whether they would like a life support machine turned off? You might have one very, very strong view. Your sister or brother might have a completely opposing view. It's much better to get those conversations talked about when you're not in the middle of that grief and pain.
Yeah.
To do it in advance.
Yeah, I understand that, definitely. Yes. Yeah. And I suppose one option is that for expats would be perhaps take parents too. Do you have any sort of insights in that respect?
Oh, I think you have to be very, very careful. Even just in the UK, when one parent dies, so often a family who might be living quite a long way away, will say, well, you know, now that mum's gone, dad, why don't you come and live with us?
Mm-hmm.
And what they don't realise is they're actually ripping that person out of a community where they've lived for many, many years, where they've got friends, they've got people their own age that they've grown old with. They have a community around them. And you pick them up and you dump them next to you, because it's actually much easier if they're next to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to make new friends when you're older, and particularly if you've just been bereaved and you're on your own for the first time in many years. Your children are likely to have a very busy life of their own, and you might not be involved in that life as much as you think. And even in the UK, you get people who have moved, who are very lonely, very isolated, and incredibly depressed and unhappy because of the community behind. I think if you translate that to moving to somewhere where you might not speak the language, you are increasing that level of isolation. You're also increasing your level of responsibility for ensuring that that person is happy and is thriving. And that can be very difficult in a foreign country. I mean, obviously, if you're moving to a country where they were born or where they spent a long time, then it might be absolutely appropriate. But it has to be their decision for their best interests, not because it saves you the trouble and the worry about caring at a distance. That's a bit blunt, but...
Well, no, and very true, I think. Because there's nothing worse than can you imagine ripping your parents from their established lives and taking them, and also, you know, take them somewhere else, and then within 2 or 3 years, perhaps you're moving on again.
Yes.
Then you have to face the mother change.
And move again. And if you are going to take them, you've got to be very clear about what care is going to be available. Mm. You know, if you're a busy professional, is the burden of looking after your parents going to fall on your spouse?
Mm.
Caring for somebody who has dementia is a challenge. Even if you love them dearly, it's an incredible challenge, and so you've got to be very clear about your motives, I think, about moving somebody.
And I guess another big consideration would be, I mean, healthcare levels of, you know, healthcare provision vary dramatically.
Yes.
And also you would probably not have access to any state provision, so it would all have to be private.
It would all have to be privately done. Yes.
So, yeah, that kind of probably almost rules that option out completely.
On the other hand, you might find somebody saying, I've always wanted to live, you know.
Yes, no, that's true.
And then you're probably trying to say, well, just come for an extended holiday.
Well, I mean, there is that example. There is that opportunity, isn't it? You know,
yes.
Go and join for 2 months every year or something, or visit.
And that can be the best of both worlds.
Yeah. And, you know, I found that was something that was nice about, your parents would come and visit for 10 days to 2 weeks. And we saw them for much more of a concentrated period of time than we ever do now. We're back in the UK. You know, now we see them a couple of days here, a day there, you know, and they really kind of became part of the family for a 2 week period, which was nice.
Which is wonderful. And again, if you've got children, it means that you can really establish, even in a short period of time, you know, the going to school, the coming back, the looking over the homework, all that sort of stuff.
Yes, exactly. Be part of the family in life. Yes. So is there anything else I should have asked you? People who are considering sort of caring for their relatives whilst they're abroad, you know, have I missed anything?
I don't think so. I think all I would say is it's not too late. If you've gone abroad and you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, oh my goodness, I didn't do that and I didn't do something else and I really should have done that, it isn't too late, because communication is such, sometimes you might find it easier having a telephone conversation or a Skype conversation than actually sitting down with a parent and talking about powers of attorney or, you know, what's going to happen, you know, if they become ill. So it isn't too late, but don't leave it. Do it now, because it is amazing how stressful it is if you don't know what to do in a crisis, because you don't know what your parents would want or you haven't got the information to hand.
Yes. And I can vouch for that, not personally, but I've observed that in other people who've been abroad and had the sudden horrendous issues to deal with from abroad, or had to travel back as a drop of a hat,
Yes.
Pay extortionate flight fees. I mean, that was one thing you mentioned at the beginning, but I had a friend who, I think they paid $10,000 for a flight because they just couldn't get her on a flight.
No.
And she needed to go like that, within the space of a few hours. So,
I mean, okay. Yes, you need your emergency.
You need your
emergency money. It used to be your bus fare tucked into, the pocket in your school, but
now it's a sizable sum in your account.
Now it's just a credit card with a good balance on it. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so let's just finish. Just give us a quick overview about the type of support you can provide to time finders, should anyone be interested.
Well, obviously we help people with the whole contingency planning phase, but I think where our expat services have really developed is helping a parent to move to somewhere more manageable. That brings in our whole services of finding the right place for them to move to, whatever home that might be. Helping them downsize. You talked about helping my mother sort through a lifetime's possessions. It's amazing how much stuff people have in a house that they will have to downsize if they're moving to somewhere smaller. Mm. We look after all that with the parent, and then helping them get settled in at the other end, whatever that other end is. But I think for expats, we've developed two services. One is the continuing support, which is where somebody has capacity, is perhaps just a little bit frail, has lost confidence about their ability to deal with their household management. So somebody to come in maybe once a month to check the bank statements, make sure that the bills are being paid, that the gardener's doing what the gardener should be doing, that sort of thing. And then for people who don't have capacity or who are living in a care home or having care in their own home, then we provide an oversight service. And this is really checking to make sure that the care is of a good quality, that obviously there isn't any abuse or unkindness. It's liaising closely with the care staff. It's also being a point of contact in an emergency. So, a care home, for example, only has responsibility to get somebody to hospital. And then they leave them. So what will happen is that a care home manager might phone somebody living in Vancouver and say, your mother's fallen over, you've got to come home. Mm. By the time you've jumped on a plane and 11 hours later arrived back at Heathrow, you might come back to the care home to find your mother sitting having a gin and tonic in the lounge saying, oh, I wasn't expecting you for another couple of months, dear. You've wasted that time, that precious time. That journey that you perhaps can only make once a year, you've wasted it, you didn't need to come. So we can be the first point of contact in an emergency. We'll go to the hospital, we'll liaise with the hospital staff. We can make the call saying, don't worry, your mum's going to be fine. She's being discharged this afternoon. She's got a bit of a black eye, but she's just fine. Don't worry. You don't need to come back now. We'll set up a Skype call as soon as she's back home. Or conversely, we sometimes have to say, you need to come back. You need to come back now. Mm-hmm. And we can support that person through, what can be a very stressful time at the end of their parent's life, and help them with the practical arrangements after somebody's died. But because we've built up a relationship with our expat client and with their parent, we're perhaps closer to the family than any care home person might be.
Yeah. And as you say, they have a limit of their responsibility, whereas you obviously are picking it up after that, and you have that relationship, so ongoing relationship with the expat. Yeah, it sounds like it was a wonderful peace of mind and support that you offer in those services. So thank you, Alison. Time to bring this call to an end. But really appreciate your time and your advice.
Thank you.
Certainly something I didn't give enough time and thought to, I think, while I was abroad. But I'm home now.
and you can do all the things that you didn't do.
Still in the process of doing it, but although I was at a younger, my parents were younger, so it wasn't. Yeah, but you never know. You never know, and I think the earlier we have these kinds of conversations and think through these issues, you know, the better for everyone. So, thank you very much for bringing it all to our minds and talking us through.
That's a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Alison. Thank you. So, for everyone listening, if you'd like to connect with Alison, I will put a link to Time Finders, the business, on the bottom of the blog post that goes with this podcast, so you can connect with her through that. If you have enjoyed this episode of Thriving Abroad Podcasts, then please subscribe and leave a review for us on iTunes. And if you'd like to know more about what we do at Thriving Abroad, you can find us at www.thrivingabroad.com, on the Thriving Abroad Facebook page, and on Twitter, where we're at Thriving Abroad. So thank you very much for listening today, and we'll be back soon with our next podcast. Bye for now.